I have a tagline, but it might not be suitable.
Oh, I'm very excited for a tagline, suitable or not.
Welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast that doesn't want to put anything in your vagina.
Oh.
If you know goop, you get the joke. If you don't, you think it's real weird in here.
It's extremely fucking weird in here. Also, we don't want to make candles that smells like anybody's junk.
You don't want to make candles that smell like anybody's junk. I am Michael Hobbs.
I'm Aubrey Gordon. Are we seriously starting there?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, great. If you want to support the show, you're already doing that.
Already doing it.
Today, we have, I think, a very fun bonus episode.
It's a little watch party.
It's a little watch party that doesn't require you to watch anything. And in fact, I would say I don't recommend watching it.
Yeah, definitely. We did it so you don't have to.
It's the only kind of watch party we do on the Patreon. Shit you really actually shouldn't watch. Mike and I both watched different episodes of The Goop Lab, which is a Netflix show based around this concept of goop staffers trying out a bunch of different quote-unquote wellness treatments on camera.
Right.
And we each watched a different episode, and we're going to describe them to one another.
Yes.
And discuss.
What are your overall thoughts? Because I'm assuming that you, like me, had never seen the show before.
I had not seen the show before. My overall thoughts were I was surprised that it was not more engaging.
Oh, really?
Did you find it engaging?
I mean, my episode was 30 minutes long and it took me 4 hours to watch it because I kept pausing to go like fact check stuff. So I don't know, like as a complete work watched all the way through, I really have no sense.
This is peak Michael Hobbs. I just sat down and watched mine all the way through and was like, this all seems like bullshit, whatever. I didn't fact check shit, fuck all. I fact checked nothing. I spent more time pulling together a little intro on like context around Goop and the show and who Gwyneth Paltrow is and all of that kind of stuff. How about you? What was your episode? What did you think of it? What were your impressions broadly?
So I watched the episode on psychics and mediums and talking to people from not from the future, but from like beyond the grave.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much worse than I thought it was going to be. I went in with low expectations. Like I knew it was going to be like pseudoscience adjacent, right? But considering all of the criticism that Gwyneth Paltrow has gotten over the years, and I remember when this show premiered, that it was sort of her like doing penance. It was like, oh, we're going to test these concepts. And the whole thing was like, we're going to kind of roll back some of the woo-woo stuff that we did before. And, you know, she got so much criticism over this jade egg stuff and various other forms of misinformation that she spread. I thought like they would be much more careful, right? Or they would like hide the woo-woo stuff in coded language or do it sort of between the lines. But it's just like full on psychics are real and you can talk to people after they're dead. It's just like fully like making the argument. I was like, okay, is it good TV? I don't really know, right? Because I was watching it in like 10 second bursts with like alt tab going. But it was actually much more irresponsible than I thought it was going to be. And I went in thinking it was going to be quite irresponsible.
I'll say this. I have in my head come up with a little like Michael Hobbs scale of media intolerance. And like a 10 is like Newsies. That's not actually a 10. That's like a 2. And then a 10 is that Belle Gibson interview where she's like, I was raised to believe that I'm 21. That's actually probably considerably closer to a 10. So I'm curious about on this scale that I just made up and revised in front of you, where would you say that watching Goop Labs fell?
We're going to do a dramatic reading. There's a scene that's levels of awkwardness that I literally couldn't watch the screen. I had to alt tab and do it by audio. And then I transcribed it and we're going to do it as a dramatic reading.
It's I love every motherfucking thing about this.
But give us your intro. What was your Gwyneth contextualizations?
So I just wanted to do a little like situating for folks who have not been in the thick of all the Goop stuff. Goop is a sort of wellness and lifestyle brand that was founded in 2008. It started out as an email newsletter. This is actually how I came to know it. My friend Lily subscribed me to it without telling me because she thought it would be very funny. And she was right.
She was correct. Yes.
So fucking right. So the first email that I got on the Goop newsletter was the Christmas gift guide, which had sections for him, for her, and for baby. And the first thing in the for baby section was a solid gold rattle.
Nice.
So, like, this is this sort of wellness brand. It is defined by wealth. It is defined in many ways by whiteness. It has drawn criticism for a lot of things sort of over the 15 or so years that it's been around. It's drawn criticism for promoting pseudoscience, for promoting wellness treatments, quote unquote, that can actually be like physically harmful to people. There are a bunch of examples of this. If you're not familiar with Goop and you would like to get more familiar with Goop, seriously, just Google Goop jade eggs.
Yes.
And Goop, this candle smells like my vagina. There's also some sort of counter criticism, but it's not very strong. There have been some op-eds, like the New York Times ran an op-ed a while back that was sort of written by two women who were like, the hate of Goop is just like patriarchy, finding ways to hate women. And I really fundamentally disagree, team.
I do feel like one of the effects of societal misogyny is that it like amplifies legitimate critiques in a way. But the critique of Goop is extremely legitimate.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's like there are lots of broader sort of social forces at play here. And like fundamentally, Goop is wrong about a bunch of shit, right? Like they just keep being wrong. So like, yes, there may be many things sort of powering and supporting that. And also seems pretty clear that this is like a company that's like doing some pretty considerably harmful and risky things. Right.
It's not really like a defense of Goop to be like, this is tinged with misogyny, which like, yes. Yep. But also, like, it's bad to sell people products that harm them.
Yes.
Like, that's correct. Also, that's also a pretty easy one.
The Goop Lab with Gwyneth Paltrow was a TV deal that Goop struck with Netflix. It premiered in January 2020. The concept is that you're watching these sort of senior Goop staffers trying out the kinds of wellness treatments that Goop promotes. In the intro section to the show, which plays before each episode, they have a clip of Gwyneth Paltrow saying, "When I started Goop in 2008, I thought my calling was something different than making out with Matt Damon on screen."
Yeah. Well, did you also notice in the intro, they kept using quotes in which she curses? She's like, "I don't give a fuck about this," or whatever. And it felt very calculated to me as like, oh, it's Gwyneth Paltrow as you've never seen her, right? Like the gloves are off and she's real. Mm-hmm. It just felt really tactical that every quote had like a swear in it. And then did you notice after the Matt Damon thing, there's like a dubstep, like blah, 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 blah theme song that comes in? I was like, what are we doing here?
I did not notice that and I find it hilarious.
I am a fan of dubstep needle drops. So I was like, all right, well done, Gwyneth. You got me.
Tell me your thoughts on this statement in the intro.
I thought the intro was like a rich text. So she says this thing of like, my career was frivolous. I was making out with Matt Damon. And then we get the dubstep needle drop. And then we get some clips of her like cursing. And then she talks about like, the quote is, it's about optimization of the self. We're here one time, we get one life. So the idea is, I used to do this frivolous thing in Hollywood, and now I want to do something bigger and more meaningful and more important with my career. But then what's fascinating is, like, it's a lifestyle brand. Like, she's selling skincare and stuff. She's repackaging what is fundamentally just, like, a very normal capitalistic endeavor as some sort of self-actualization, right? That she's selling people something deeper and higher. No, Gwyneth, you're just selling health and wellness products to people.
It's literally a scented candle.
Yeah, like I don't really mind this as an activity. I think it's fine for people to pursue these kinds of things. But it's just, it's fascinating that we've now reached this thing, especially within health and wellness, where it's like, it has to be virtue. It can't just be like, I'm selling products to people that will make them feel better.
Yeah, I started writing a thing about how over the course of the 2010s in particular, there was this push to do a bunch of marketing of particularly direct to consumer products. So like Tom's shoes or Bombas socks or whatever that were doing, they were doing two things that I found really fascinating and like extremely fucking troubling as an organizer. One is there was that model of like you buy one and we give one away to a shelter for unhoused people, or we like send them off. Like Tom's was always like, we send shoes to Africa. And I was like, what? Yeah. That's a big place. What are you doing? Ah.
Yeah.
So like that's one prong of it. And the other prong of it was referring to buying a product as joining a movement.
Yeah.
And it feels like she's in those kinds of water. She's not doing either one of those things, but it's very much about like the aggrandizement of what are fundamentally just like consumerist capitalist enterprises, right? Like, and I say this about like, look, before we started recording, Mike and I talked for like a half an hour about like my makeup today and what makeup products I use. Like, I'm not fucking above anything, but it's not joining a movement. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, and it's certainly not like a charitable or like, it's not creating systemic change. Right. I bought some eyeshadow and I like the eyeshadow.
Right.
You buy some shoes, maybe you like the shoes.
And all of this is fine. I actually, like, I don't want to sound judgmental, and I do think that there is an element of like misogyny in people, you know, critiquing the beauty industry or like, oh, it's frivolous to buy makeup or whatever. But it's like, this is the framework into which this show fits, right? Ultimately, it's an advertisement for her Amazon website.
Yes. And in this way, they're not especially unique, right? Like they're doing things that many other companies are doing, which is using this weird sort of like aggrandizing language and set of frameworks about what is functionally just like marketing.
Speaking of which, can we talk about the disclaimer that shows up? Did your episode have that?
Did you transcribe it in your 10-second bursts of viewing?
I did indeed.
Yeah, you did.
So it starts with this like title card on the screen. It says, "The following series is meant to entertain and inform, not provide medical advice. You should always consult your doctor when it comes to your personal health or before you start any treatment." Which, yes. But also, it feels like this is a license to be less responsible. It actually feels like when you have a little title card that everybody, of course, forgets about by the end of the show, at the beginning, it's like a little get out of jail free card. Because then if anybody calls you up on like, hey, you said this thing on your show that is like total misinformation, you can be like, we've got the title card at the beginning.
Well, also the first real sort of glimpse we got of Goop on this show was the Celery Juice episode, where they were like regularly publishing shit from the medical medium, Anthony William, like King Grifter. And then they would like post a little disclaimer at the start of the post being like, we have in-house PhDs and they wanted us to remind you that none of this is science. Anyway, here you go. We're publishing it anyway. And I was like, what? Why?
This idea that like people only form their opinions on their own health or like which products are efficacious from like things they read in medical journals or like what I read in the New York Times. No, people absorb information like little snowballs. We all get stuff everywhere around us that inform us. It's not like we have like information reception mode and then we're like, I'm ready to receive information now. And then we shut that off the rest of the time.
Yeah.
It just seems so... We realize the responsibility we have in the show, but we're just like, we're just not going to do it. We're just going to have a disclaimer here. And then like, we really have no obligation to fact check anything at this point.
Yeah, it feels pretty chicken shit. But also like parts of it feel really boilerplate, right? Like it's like fucking constant that you see and hear media that's like, this is not health advice. Consult your doctor.
Well, that's another thing too, is that we're all drowning in so many of these messages at this point that they're all kind of meaningless, right? It's like terms and conditions when you sign up to like an airline website or something. You're just like, scroll, 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 accept.
Yeah, that disclaimer, I was like, oh, hey, we're in it now.
Yeah, I know. She knows what she's doing.
Neat.
Tell me about your episode. Walk me through. Teach me about anti-aging.
So the episode that I did was called The Health Span Plan, in which there are three sort of Goop staffers who are at the center of this particular quote unquote experiment in the Goop lab. The chief creative officer, Elise, there's Gwyneth, of course, and there's their VP of marketing, Kelly. So they sit down and have a conversation with two people, Walter Longo, who is a doctor that runs the University of Southern California Longevity Institute, and Morgan Levine, who is a PhD from the Department of Pathology there. Essentially, like, Walter Longo has spent his career looking at the effects of fasting. And he's sort of, you know, he talks about, like, you know, we found some really incredible health benefits from fasting. And then we also found that it's, like, really detrimental for people. It provides these incredible health benefits around insulin sensitivity and around all kinds of, like, sort of metabolic health kind of stuff. But on the flip side, it makes you anorexic and leaves you susceptible to infectious diseases, is genuinely what he said on screen. And I was like, those are some pretty big downsides. Got it.
Yeah.
Like, pathway to eating disorder and you, like, get sick all the time seems maybe not, like, my personal favorite way to pursue health promoting behaviors, but okay. So he has developed this plan. It's essentially, like, Gwyneth Paltrow refers to it as a cleanse. It's a 5-day program wherein he's trying to mimic the effects of fasting without actually having you eat no food at all. So he's developed a 5-day program where you get, like, around 800 calories a day is the number that they keep tossing out. Everything comes in a box or a packet. So there's, like, a dried soup packet that you add hot water to. It looked grim.
It sounds really grim. He's trying to replicate the effects of not eating, but also keeping you alive. Like, it's kind of a tall order.
He talks about it at one point and he's like, you can't do it for more than 5 days because that's, like, really, really bad for you. Like, really, like, don't do it for more than 5 days. Seriously, there's a reason we sell it as a 5-day thing. And he talks about how, like, actually people should be doing this, like, 3 or 4 times a year.
Sure.
The person that he's there with is Morgan Levine, who's a pathologist who has developed this framework for understanding what Morgan calls someone's chronological age and their biological age. So the idea is, like, your chronological age is, like, how many days or weeks or months or years have you been alive, and your biological age. It's like a way of reflecting on sort of, like, how well are various bodily systems functioning for you? What's your organ function? What's your everything? They then use that as a jumping off point to talk for the rest of the episode about aging. They just talk about Goop staffers' feelings about aging. It's very fucking weird. They have a whole staff conversation where they're like, you're hearing all of these Goop staffers who are overwhelmingly, like, willowy white women.
Conventionally attractive. Yeah. Just like the same people in my episode.
And they're talking about their fears about aging, and the whole conversation fucking sucks. Because what they're talking about fundamentally is a fear of getting old and a fear of becoming disabled, right? Like, they talk about not being able to do things. They talk about, like, losing some, like, functions that they currently rely on in their bodies, all this kind of stuff. But there's no point at which they go, what about actual disabled people? Or what about, like, actually old people? Like, should we have a conversation about, like, aging as a whole? They don't do that. They just go, I'm really afraid of this thing. No, I'm really afraid of this thing. And they just talk about, like, how terrifying it would be to get old or to be perceived as old, with no looking under the hood of, like, what's behind that? Where does that come from?
It's funny to me that they didn't just, like, talk to an old person.
It's, like, really weird.
Dude, I don't have that many old people in my life, but the old people that I do know love talking about that shit.
Call my mom.
I know.
You'll get plenty.
I have some references for Gwyneth Paltrow if she needs them.
I'm not old, and it made me so uncomfortable.
Dude, I know. I, like, just turned 40, and I don't feel weird about it. Like, I think it's fine. I didn't have any, like, feelings about it. But also, I do not want to hear a bunch of, like, hot 23-year-olds talk about aging and what they're afraid of. I just, like, I'm just not interested in hearing that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my knees are going to hurt when I climb the stairs. It's like, yeah. It happens.
It's so fucking shitty. Like, of course, you get to have your anxieties, whatever. I'm talking about the decision to televise all of this.
Right.
What it turns into is a whole conversation of non-disabled young people reassuring one another that they're not old and they're not disabled.
Good TV.
I was just like, get me out of here. While all of that is happening, they are doing a quote-unquote experiment. This is the Goop Lab, after all. Mm-hmm. These three very senior staffers decide that they are going to do a blood test and test their biological age. And then they're going to do a kind of like dietary intervention. And then they're going to do their blood work again and see whose biological age changed.
It's a lab.
It's a lab, sure. And it's sort of like, ostensibly, I would watch this and think, oh, they're going to like prove which diet works the best for anti-aging. That's what I sort of expected. Mm-hmm. They resist that. To their credit, they just go, you did this and your biological age changed in these ways. There you go.
Is the science of biological age established at all?
They don't really get into the science of biological age. Essentially, the way that Dr. Levine describes it, who's the person who is sort of like shepherding this framework through the episode, is, you know, we're measuring a bunch of specific functions in your body. Like, it is a straight up blood test and we are testing like medically knowable things about you. But then they're slotting it into this framework that is about age.
Yeah, that's what's so weird about it.
And they combine all of this. So they each do a different diet. And then also, for some fucking reason, they each get a different kind of facial.
Okay, sure.
To like look younger. The vehicle for this episode is not science. The vehicle for this episode is appearance and perception, right? Like, that's what they're talking about here, which is fine. But then like, don't use a medical or medical seeming framework to, you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to go medical, go medical.
Well, it just seems like they're translating these like pretty normal and kind of boring biological markers of like, what's your resting heart rate? What's your cholesterol, et cetera, into like this age reading.
Yeah.
You could translate those numbers into all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
You could translate them into like, your heart attack risk is 12% higher because of your cholesterol reading, and it's 2% lower because of your heart rate or whatever. Like, there's a million other ways you could slice and dice it, but it's just like, it's just a weird kind of paradigm that they're putting on these boring ass numbers.
I spent some time thinking about like, why is this biological age thing landing so gross with me? And I think the reason for that is the idea behind chronological age is like very similar to the idea behind the BMI, which is like, there's a correct weight. There's a correct way for your body to be. And the idea is that there's this sort of mythical, like if they say your biological age is like 39, which fucking 39 year old? There are also disabled 39 year olds. There are 39 year olds with terrible liver function. So it's like this weird mythical, like being healthy means being young, which I disagree with.
Right.
It's like layered with social meaning in a way that it's completely uncritical of. When you are in those kinds of like very wealthy, very white, very cis women spaces, like conversations about age are always fucking loaded, and aging is always the enemy. Whether it's through a beauty framework or a wellness framework, everything is about anti-aging. So the idea that you could have a neutral or like scientifically grounded conversation that was like divorced from those social values, especially with this particular group of people, just like didn't hold water for me. And it shouldn't have, because they were like, our other anti-aging thing is we're going to all get facials. Each of them, then the chief creative officer and the VP of marketing, they each take on a 21-day diet.
Okay.
The chief creative officer eats vegan plus fish, so sort of like a modified pescatarian. The VP of marketing does just straight vegan, and then Gwyneth Paltrow does the 5-day Dr. Longo cleanse, the like packets of soup thing. They have like a bunch of back and forth about like whose is harder. Theirs is for 3 weeks, hers is for 5 days, but hers is like really restrictive in different ways. And like at one point they're talking to the person who does pescatarian and they're like, that's just how you eat anyway. And she was like, I know. Like, she was like pretty excited. It is fascinating to me, I will say, to watch Gwyneth Paltrow open this giant fucking box, like cardboard box full of smaller cardboard boxes that are 5 cardboard boxes, one for each day of food that she gets to eat. Right. And they're all in these like sort of white packets. They're all completely dehydrated. They're all whatever. And I was just thinking about like how much fucking talking Goop does about the evils of processed foods.
And it's just literal astronaut food.
Yeah,
it's just
someone like a who powder. Would like abso-fucking-lutely never eat a Cheez-It. And yeah, then yeah, it's yeah. like, give me this spirulina hot soup Goop.
Yeah.
Also, like, you're very concerned with the naturalness of everything. And like, this is fundamentally an unnatural thing to restrict food if you have access to food. There are very Goop arguments to make against everything that they're doing. And they're not articulating any of that. Right. They're not going right. Now, I know you would think blah, 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 blah. Like, basically, that's all they need to do with all of this, at least for me, is to just be like, hey, we're not actually old people. Nobody sees us as old.
Right. This is your thing about being like some would say, or like the obvious counterpoint to what I'm saying is, and then you respond to the counterpoint.
Just like not acknowledge. Really, you know what I mean? Like so little would have gone such a long way.
Yeah.
They also go in for these facials. The chief creative officer gets an acupuncture facial. They make a big deal okay. about like there are 100 needles in your face right now. Can you believe it? And she's like, yes, I've had acupuncture before.
I mean, these are the staff of Goop.
Yeah, I work all. For Goop. Of course I've had fucking acupuncture.
Yeah.
Wendy, who's the VP of marketing, gets this abso-fucking-lutely bizarre facial where they physically, they like inject her face with like a numbing agent, and then they just sew thread along her jawline.
Oh, what? Like pull through it her more skin?
Taut.
Oh, yes. No, I'm not doing that. No.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely it's not. So fucking wild.
I'm so glad this was your episode. I would not have made it through that.
Sewing skin, not a thing I like to see, oh. as it turns out. Gwyneth's facial is the famed, you may have heard about this, vampire facial. Have you heard of a vampire facial?
I've only seen this in like debunkings of Goop. I don't actually know what it is.
Okay. A vampire facial is where you go in, you have a blood draw. They separate out, they like spin your blood and separate out the plasma and then they paint your own plasma onto your own face.
Isn't that how like Lance Armstrong was doping? This is like performance enhancement facial.
They call it a PRP facial, platelet rich plasma facial.
Sure. It's less bad than the threads in your face.
Fuck,
right?
Man.
Health-wise, it's probably
the
fine.
The threads in your face. So like while Gwyneth is like getting this facial, she's like talking about how she really likes this idea because, as she put, this is the one quote that I was like verbatim, I gotta get it. They're like painting the plasma on her face and she goes, I like that it's my own material. It's not a toxin.
In my head, I was thinking having my own blood painted on my face would be like fine, waste of money, but fine. But then having someone else's blood painted on my face, I'd feel super weird about, in a way that like it doesn't make any sense, right? Because it's just your face, right?
You're not,
they like,
call that one the Hannibal. I also forgot one part of the facial, which is they don't just paint your plasma onto your face. They then do something which they don't totally explain. The person administering the facial goes, now I'm going to needle it in.
Oh, and they like push it into the skin?
With this thing that looks kind of like a medical version of like a tattoo gun kind of thing. Like it's clearly like a motorized needle kind of thing. They don't say what it does or how it works, but I imagine it's just creating small puncture wounds. You know what I mean? Like little punctures in the surface of the skin to let it like sink in deeper or something, right?
Is her face like bright red afterwards?
It's very, they describe it as very rosy. And I was like, oh, okay. It's more than it really, it looks like you had put a needle real fast in and out of your face a bunch of times all over.
It's like the last 45 minutes of fucking Braveheart. There's like this like bloody face just like Jesus dripping Christmas. From her chin.
No, she doesn't look bloody, but she does look like, it looks like a really localized like sunburn, really bad sunburn.
Oh, okay.
They then come back together. They like test their biological age again. And what they find is pretty underwhelming. Wendy's biological age didn't change. It just stayed the same after 3 weeks of being vegan. Elise had the vegan plus fish diet, so like modified pescatarian. Her biological age decreased by 1 year, but she also said she was doing like a bunch more exercise and a bunch of like, she was doing like a lot more things in addition to just
right.
vegan plus fish. Gwyneth Paltrow's 5-day garbage fasting cleanse led to a loss of 1.75 years to her biological age. But again, they don't say at all, like, okay, the results of that fast were your insulin sensitivity increased in these ways, your blah, blah, blah. Right. Like, they don't really unpack it in any meaningful fucking way.
Yeah.
So they just have this conversation that's like, it feels bad to think that I look old or that other people might perceive me as being old.
Right.
And then they go, well, you fasted for 5 days and now your body is younger. The end. Like, there's no unpacking of any of it.
It's the kind of thing that would be like a good like BBC documentary, right? Of like the science of aging. What does it mean that different people are at different quote unquote biological ages? Like, you could do it in a way that is like actually sensitive and interesting. But of course, I mean, that's not what we go to Netflix for.
And you could also like talk to doctors and researchers who are like, I don't actually think this framework is useful.
Exactly.
Or like, I don't think, you know what I mean? Like, you could really get into like, what is this framework? How does it operate? Is there controversy around it? They don't do any of that stuff. They just talk to rich white ladies about how bad it feels when people think you're old. And then they end with a joke about the diets, and the chief creative officer, Elise, is like, well, the good news is like, you're done with your diet now, and you can like, she doesn't say diet, like cleanse or whatever, and you can like get back to your French fries. And Gwyneth Paltrow looks at the camera and goes, oh, I'm already back to my French fries. And I'm like, all right.
Oh my God. The performance of normalcy by celebrities is always fascinating to me too.
Just any of that shit that's like a thin person sort of like making a meal, so to speak, out of like eating fries or eating pizza and being like, I'm so irreverent, I'm so whatever. I go back and forth on like to what degree that's like their fault. But like, as a fat person who absolutely fucking cannot eat a piece of pizza in public without comment or stares or whatever, I am just like full of resentment about it. I'm fucking full of resentment about it. And that's not theirs to hold, but it does feel like it is this shitty kind of like trading on, like, you only post pictures like that. You only go, oh, I've already gotten back to my French fries. If you know that people are going to be like, stop, you don't eat French fries. I see you. You know what I mean? Like, you only do that because it's a path to like reinforcement of your own thinness.
These jokes are everywhere.
The joke only functions if you're like, only fat people eat French fries. That's how they get fat. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the only way that joke works. And I was just like, I was so out for so much of this episode. That was like the closer. And I was like, I'm fucking done.
I'm sure she does eat French fries, but it's like, this is now part of the brand of, especially somebody like Gwyneth Paltrow, who's seen as having this like immaculate life. They have to constantly perform like, oh, I'm so messy. Like, oh, I never have everything together with the kids.
Anyway, that's my episode. I found it supremely unsatisfying in a way that is, in retrospect, extraordinarily predictable.
It was almost as bad as experiencing linear time and becoming older every day.
Tell me about, you watched a fucking episode about psychics?
Yes. My episode was called Are You Into It? But Into It is spelled like intuition. Into It.
Oh, like the parent company of TurboTax?
Yes, exactly. But then the whole kind of framing of the show and the use of the term labs is, of course, doing this performance of like, oh, we're testing things, right? That it's supposed to be this like scientific endeavor. Like with yours, three different people try this thing of like, oh, what have we learned? So it's trying to be this like investigation of, are mediums and psychics real, right? But of course, it's not like a real investigation. So we open on the couch. It's like a little kind of lounge area where it's Gwyneth and Elise, this creative officer lady, on one side. And then on the other side, there is a medium named Laura, who is apparently Gwyneth's personal psychic.
Uh-huh.
And Gwyneth says that she has a challenge with meeting psychics because she's extremely famous and you can Google everything. So if a psychic is like, you got divorced in 1996 or something, she's like, yeah, everyone knows that.
You have an unusually strong connection to the band Coldplay. And she's like, yeah, fucking tell me about
it. I'm seeing a C. Is there an old play somewhere?
Yeah.
And then the other person we meet is somebody named Julie Beischel, who we learn is the director of research for something called the Windbridge Research Center. And of course, I was like, pause, alt tab,
Google.
Windbridge Research Center.
Google it.
Which appears to be, it's a 501c3, but it's like a research organization, something, something. It's her and her husband that run it. I don't know if there's like a building. I mean, it seems like it's just the two of them and they've like incorporated as a research center. Mm. And what it does is it produces scientific research that pretends to be about testing whether the claims of mediums are true, but is really just research designed to produce an affirmative result saying that mediums are true. She's published a number of studies on this. Mm-hmm. And I found like a TED talk of hers, or like not like a TED talk, but like a presentation that she gave where she's going through PowerPoint slides of like, this is me, this is my work, this is the Winbridge Center, etc. And she has one slide where she goes, my work has been published in many journals anyway. And then she like goes to the next slide really quickly. And I was like, okay, pause. Like, I want to see what journals she's actually been published in. So her work has been published quite widely, but some of it has been published in her own journal, which is called Threshold, the Journal of Interdisciplinary Consciousness Studies. She's also been published in the Australian Journal of Parapsychology, the Transpersonal Psychology Review, the Journal of Scientific Exploration, something called Explore, the Journal of Science and Healing, which is described on Wikipedia as a sham masquerading as a real scientific journal. These are the kinds of publications that she's publishing in.
Yeah.
But of course, none of that is like in Goop, right? It's just like, I'm a scientist and I'm looking into whether or not mediums are real. And it's the way that this person is framed throughout the episode is like, she's the skeptic one, right? And there's Laura who's like, I'm a medium and I speak with people from beyond the grave. And there's Julie who's like, I'm the skeptical researcher and I'm just applying science to this. Mm. The first scene is we're sort of learning about Laura's skills. So Laura is somebody who will speak to your dead relatives. She says crossed over, people who have crossed over. Uh-huh. So we start with her talking to a Goop staffer. This happens a number of times, who Laura says something. She's like, I'm seeing an EL or an L, you know, this like classic kind of open-ended psychic stuff, mm-hmm. right? And then the Goop staffer immediately starts crying and is like, my mom's name is Lori. And apparently she had like lost her mom like fairly recently. Hmm. And then Laura says, she helped get you here and she's so thankful that you're here and you're brave for being here.
Whoa.
And so, of course, like this staffer breaks down even more. And it's like,
it
sort of summarizes my like complicated thoughts on mediums generally and like psychics generally, which is that I mostly think that they're like pretty harmless. I know various people who've been like on the edges of like psychic medium world for a while. And like, it's clear to me that they're providing something to people if the people believe it.
I'm sort of inclined to agree with you. I know a couple of people as well. I'm like, hello, Pacific Northwest. Of course, we fucking know people who've gone to psychics and
exactly.
tarot card readers and all kinds of, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like all kinds of stuff. And it fits to me under the category of like placebo effect, right? Which is just like, however it's fucking working, it's working for you. Fine. God bless. Yeah. The place where it gets hinky for me is I have known one person who sort of used that as a way to like not engage with things that were happening around them, right? To sort of like retreat into the world of psychic whateverness.
Right.
That felt like unhelpful, but that's like all kinds of things you can use in a way that feels productive or counterproductive, right?
It sounds a lot like religion to me, where it's like organized religion can be really bad, but also as an individual thing, religion can be a real source of meaning and morality for people. And also me as an individual, I really have no interest in talking people out of their religion.
Same.
And also like if you go to a psychic and they connect you with your mom who just died and you feel like you get a sense of closure, I'm not going to like at a dinner party try to talk you out of that. Like that's a huge dick move.
You know, that's made up, right?
Yeah,
totally.
The next scene is like this seminar. It had like a very summer camp vibe with 10 or 15 Goop staffers. Mm. And I think the reason this really reminded me of religion is because this is something I've literally done at church camp.
Mm.
So they all kind of stand around a circle and then one person stands in the middle and everyone sort of holds the palms of their hands in this kind of like receiving way out toward the person in the middle. And the person in the middle then describes like, I felt this sense of energy. I felt like I was being lifted up.
Mm.
And Again, we cut to a staffer immediately crying. There's so much crying in this episode. I think at church camp, the way we did it was like people put their hands on you. So you have 10 or 15 people around you and everybody puts a hand on like your shoulder or whatever. And you can sort of convince yourself that you can feel the positive energy and the acceptance of all these other people flowing through them into you. And like it's a real like physical feeling in those moments. And like the people sending the energy feel it, the people receiving the energy feel it. Mm-hmm. And so to me, my experience of watching this was like, this is probably bullshit, but also it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, in the same way that like, you know, when Catholics talk about confession, I'm like, that sounds like therapy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm
like, it's just,
you feel better because you talked about a thing that was bothering you and that was kind of,
yeah,
you know, emotionally weighing you down. That's
right.
Fine and great. This is like, you
this
needed
seems fine.
Something
yeah.
that felt like it brought this grief process to a close or sort of like moved it into
right.
its next chapter or whatever. And you got that through this. Okay.
This is like the sort of love and acceptance part. But then we then move into the part of the seminar where this woman, Laura, starts talking about how everybody is a psychic.
Ooh.
And all of us are born connected to each other and we lose those connections over time. And so we then have a bunch of like exercises that people go through to like map each other's energy. So like one person stands against a wall and other people come up with crayons and draw like a shape around them, like where they're seeing their aura. And then they do this like clairvoyancy test where they have a painting at the front of the class covered in tinfoil or some sort of metallic covering. So of mm-hmm. course you can't see what the painting is of, right? And then it's like, I want you to project into the painting and I want you to see through the tinfoil and see what the painting is. So everybody has an easel in front of them and everybody draws what they think the painting is, right? So we have like a shot of somebody drawing like a landscape with like mountains in the background, like very Bob Ross.
Happy little clouds.
Exactly. Lots of happy clouds. And then we cut to Laura taking the tinfoil off of the painting and like, oh, the landscape with happy little clouds. Like it does resemble the thing that the person was drawing.
Huh.
And of course, you as an audience member are supposed to be like, oh my God.
Whoa.
But also there's like 20
yeah.
people in that room and we don't see what anybody else drew. So it's like throughout the episode, they're making these editorial choices. They're only showing you the miraculous connections of like, oh, how could it be that she saw through the painting? But like some other people probably drew some like dolphins or like a car or something. Like we don't see
yeah.
what anybody else saw in the painting.
Well, and landscapes like extremely popular to paint.
Right.
Like I don't ever fucking paint. I could absolutely see myself sitting down if someone was like, you have to paint something. I was like, I don't
yeah.
know. Grass and sky seems pretty
yeah.
easy. Let's try that.
But then we get like another like kind of moving scene between two employees. So they do this exercise where everybody has apparently brought an object from their home that is important to them. And then they trade objects and they have to like feel the energy of the object. So one person has like an antique coin or something. And so one of the pairs that we see is a woman who has a painting of a dog. And her colleague is like, there's this dog and it was a gift to somebody. And that person died and there's like a sisterly vibe with this dog. And then we cut to this person and she's like, yeah, this was a gift from my brother who died to my sister.
Whoa.
And like they predict like something, I'm seeing something with allergies. And then she's like, yeah, my brother was allergic to dogs and this was the only breed of dog that we could ever get. And
Whoa.
It's like this extremely moving story. And like this lady seems nice and the other lady seems really nice. And of course, it's framed as like somehow I have this clairvoyance where it is kind of like remarkable details that this person mm-hmm. was able to produce, right? It's not like random things like you liked the dog and it's like, oh my God, you predicted it. It's like very specific things. But again, there's like 25 people in this room and we don't see what the other conversations were.
Uh-huh.
We also don't know what they edited out of that conversation. Like there's just a lot of invisible editorial choices going on here.
Yeah.
And also these people are colleagues. And they might have like known things about each other beforehand. There's a lot of potential for manipulation in this kind of like reality show editing.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, I will say like psychics may be the most debunked topic out there.
Unbelievably debunked. Oh,
like,
my God. Yes.
Astonishingly debunked. Right. That all of this stuff about like I'm seeing a name with an E, an L, an M or an R. Right. Like those are the most common letters
right.
to start names.
The Wheel of Fortune letters.
Like
yeah.
English language names, right? There's like all of this stuff. There's like reading of facial micro expressions. There's like
yeah.
reading body language. There's like getting tips from from other people. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, there's like a bunch of ways that this shit works. And it, again, it feels like a more honest version of this episode would go, now I know what you're thinking.
Right.
They're just pulling common letters or whatever. And then like respond to that in some way.
Well, this is okay. So the show knows that like this is where your attention span is at this point in the episode. Cause you're like, okay, we've seen some like quote unquote miraculous shit. So then we get into like the skeptical section of the episode.
So they have a skeptic.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So we cut back to the couch and we've got Gwyneth saying, obviously, there's some scams. There's some fraudsters in this sector, right? What do we know about the science, right? So then we cut to Julie, who's this researcher who runs this like research institute, right? And it sounds like, oh, she's just like an objective researcher who's doing the science. Is there any basis for this, right? She's actually published quite a few studies. So if you look on Google Scholar, she has like a number of publications, and they're almost all around testing the effectiveness of mediums that she at her center has recruited and trained.
So this is like both like kind of her wheelhouse, but also her like proof of concept for her business.
Yeah, it's her like profession and also her research area, which is like itself a red flag, right? That she is training the people who are ostensibly the subjects of her research, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea is that they're doing phone sessions.
Okay.
The way that they're testing whether these mediums are real or not is you give them the first name of someone close to you who's died. That's it. That's all they get. They just get like Steve. They don't know the relationship. They don't know anything else about this person. And then the medium is supposed to give like predictions about Steve. So all of her studies over and over again find a result. She says in the abstract, because the experimental conditions of this study eliminated normal sensory sources for the information medium's report, a non-local source, however controversial, remains the only likely explanation for the accuracy and specificity of their statements. So she's like, look, the only reason that mediums would be able to predict these facts better than chance is like, people are communicating from beyond the grave. They're actually talking to Steve.
Yeah, which I don't know that that's the only explanation, but okay.
Exactly. We're getting there.
Yeah, I just am like, I don't know what the explanation is, but I'm like, to say definitively, it's like trying to prove a negative, right?
Exactly. It's a fucking huge claim.
Yeah.
To be like, after you die, your spirit or whatever, your mind leaves a trace that can be communicated with by, you know, random people who've received a training from this like think tank in Arizona. Like, that's a huge claim that requires really, really strong evidence, right?
Yeah.
So what she doesn't say in the abstract, and all of these studies are like 2 pages long. There's something really weird about how undetailed they are. What she says is these predictions, the mediums, when they're predicting the correct person, they get 51% of their predictions correct. So basically a 50-50 hit rate on their predictions. When it's a random person, they get only 35% of their predictions right.
Well, but okay. That feels supremely underwhelming.
So it's like, is this what mediums are promising people? They have a 50-50 hit rate?
Yeah.
And there's so many other things that could explain a 15% difference. This is trivial.
Yeah, and also just like, hey, come see me. Your best shot is a coin toss.
Also, there's all kinds of weird, again, this is like a really big deal of a finding, right? You're talking about like re-examining everything that we know about humanity, basically, and potentially religion. And you're publishing it in the Australian Journal of Parasocial Studies?
Yeah.
If this was a real thing, it's like, A, it would have gotten a lot more attention outside of these like very niche journals. And B, like it would probably be in like a real journal. There's a weird mismatch between what they're actually showing or claiming to show and like where this is being disseminated. Another thing that really bugged me is they don't say what the predictions are.
Like that are discussed in this study. They just say they made some predictions and then they don't say.
Yeah.
Whoa.
All they say is 51% of the predictions were correct. So it's like, if you give me the name of your friend, Steve, like how specific are these predictions?
Yeah.
Like, is it where he lived or is it something really vague? Of like, you know, Steve struggled with balancing his work life and his home life.
Sure.
Like, this is like the psychic's stock and trade, right? Is saying things that sound like they're specific to you, but are actually universal human things.
Yeah.
So the show ends with, they've been all episode, they've been building up one of the Goop staffers as like the skeptic. Like, she didn't want to participate in the laying on of the hands. She didn't want to do the aura stuff. And, of course, Laura has this whole spiel where she's like, you have to let go of your frontal lobe and you have to, like, let it flow through you, whatever. So we've kind of been building up this skeptic person, right? So the episode crescendos with this skeptical Goop employee sitting down with Laura and, like, getting a reading.
Okay.
So me and you are going to do a dramatic reading because this was, like, one of the most awkward things I've ever watched.
Oh, my God, Michael, I can't fucking wait. You're like, we're not watching the clip because I can't watch it again.
It's unwatchable. Also, Netflix doesn't allow you to do screen grabs. Okay, so this is the scene between Gwyneth Paltrow's psychic and the skeptical Goop employee. It starts out with her saying, I see twins, or maybe a Gemini birth, like June?
No, not really.
I'm going to tell them to come back to me with that later. I'm seeing a female figure coming in on mom's side of the family, but like a generation up. Is there an aunt or a great aunt that's crossed over to the other side?
On my mom's side?
I'm seeing it on the right, and that's usually the female side, and I feel like it's your grandmother's sister.
My grandmother didn't have a sister.
See, your reading is interesting because I feel like I'm getting people who aren't even connected to you.
People who I don't even know?
That's very interesting to me. I do feel like on dad's side of the family, a grandfather figure there, who in the family crossed quickly? I'm feeling a snap crossing. Like, I'm glad I went this way. If you can't place it, don't tell me.
I feel like it was my grandfather who passed quickly.
Is there a funny story or like a picture about a donkey? Or is there something with Shrek? I know.
Sorry. Not really.
I'm seeing a trip to Mexico. I'm seeing a donkey, and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say about it. I'm going to tell him to come back to me with it in another way later.
What?
Okay, so this whole scene is just fucking excruciating because this poor Goop employee is like, no. Gemini, no.
This is another, like, great fucking sketch that someone should write. It's just, like, a psychic who's only wrong.
Right? Yes, I know.
It's very
funny. A donkey,
funny.
Shrek? But then, okay, then there's a twist. This is, like, so annoying. So we're finally setting up, like, okay, maybe this person, Laura, isn't what she's cracked up to be. And, like, maybe this skeptical Goop employee is onto something, right? But then in the middle of this reading, someone from, like, backstage comes and taps on Laura's shoulder and says, Laura, I think you're reading Lindsay. And
then they cut
to some, like, producer, some, like, sound person who's, like, clearly, like, no makeup, was not planning on being on the air, clearly, like, some behind-the-scenes person. She has, like, a sound recording thing in her hand. And she's crying, and she's like, my grandfather died yesterday, and we're planning our wedding in Mexico.
It was going to be Shrek-themed.
No, but Shrek did not come up again, but they did say that there was like a joke that he made that they should have a donkey in the photo booth for the wedding or something.
Huh.
So it's like this scene that was like taking all the air out of this medium and like what it is like to go see one of these medium people as a skeptic is all of a sudden like, oh, she is a genius. She does have the gift.
This scene that was absolutely just about to end up on the cutting room floor got
exactly.
saved.
I know. That's the thing. How many other conversations like this did they have?
That's amazing.
You think the show is giving you like a dose of skepticism, but ultimately it's just like, oh, she was just reading the wrong, like she was speaking to the wrong dead person, basically.
Yeah.
But again, this lady who's having her wedding in Mexico seems really nice. Like it
sure,
seems,
absolutely. And know, like things are really raw for her and there's a lot going on. And yeah, totally. Like yeah. I got nothing against that lady. I got nothing against, you know what I mean? I'm just like, sure. Also, the single funniest line to me in this is there like a funny story or like a picture about a donkey? Or is there something with Shrek? Which is like, you have now been wrong about four things and your next pull is like, is it a donkey or Shrek?
Is it a donkey or Shrek?
Amazing.
I also want to say with this one specifically,
uh-huh.
If I was sitting in front of somebody and I wanted to trick them into thinking that I was a medium, right? First of all, most people have a grandparent who died.
Most like adults. Yeah.
This medium starts out with saying like, oh, it's someone on your mom's side, one generation up. It's like most people have, an older aunt or a grandmother who died. And then if they don't, the medium immediately switches to, oh, but maybe it's on your father's side. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a male presence, right? And then we go to the male side. She also starts out this thing where she's like, I'm seeing twins or a Gemini birth in June. Mm-hmm. We're already in relatively like wide territory. And then she's like, oh, I'm seeing something to do with Mexico. Mexico is like one of the most popular holiday destinations for Americans, especially like reasonably wealthy Americans who like live in Southern California. Mm-hmm. It's like something involving Mexico. A lot of this stuff is kind of casting around in like really broad ways, or like, yeah. Oh, I'm seeing somebody who went quickly. On some level, kind of everybody who dies goes quickly, right? Like, if I was inclined to believe this stuff, I've mentioned before my grandfather died of Parkinson's. Mm. He did go in an unexpected way. I could be like, oh my God, he did go quickly.
Yeah.
Or I could go, oh my God, he went really slowly.
Yeah.
So, yes, this is miraculous. And, like, the stuff with the donkey is, like, actually pretty fucking cool. But, like, that's really the only thing that is, like, kind of specific. Everything else is, like, you have a grandpa who died and, like, something involving Mexico is linked to that.
Well, and also, I mean, like, look, here's the hard thing about psychics and all of this sort of medium stuff is like, if you don't believe in it, there's no amount of like, quote unquote, proof or demonstrations that is really going to make you believe in it. And if you do believe in it, there's no amount of quote unquote proof or demonstrations that's going to make you not believe in it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just sort of a mirror. You just get to see your own beliefs reflected back at you. Congratulations, everybody.
Yes, that's very smart. And I think you're going to end up feeling like you've engaged in this process of discovery when actually you've engaged in this process of confirmation.
I feel like I come into this conversation committed to being noncommittal on psychics and mediums. And I am leaving even more committed to being noncommittal. Right. Like, and I think that's probably going to be true of most people watching this episode, most people engaging in like most stuff about psychics. Right.
It would take so much to convince me that this stuff was real. Honestly.
Totally.
I want like social security numbers and shit from beyond the grave. Like that's the only thing that'll do it.
How did Gwyneth respond to all of this?
She did the thing, I don't know if she does this in the other episodes, but she does the thing where they'll say some like total platitude, like we're more connected than we know, and then Gwyneth will be like, oh yes. You're like, okay, Gwyneth. I kept thinking of, you know, the 30 Rock episode where Liz Lemon sits next to Oprah on the plane?
Yes.
And Oprah is like, when you say so true, so wise to every single thing that I say, it feels like you're not listening. That was what I thought about Gwyneth, that like every single thing she's like, oh my God, yes. Oh, my heart.
So true, so wise.
They're all just like so easy. Like I think all of us leave a trace in other people's memories.
There's no I in team. Oh my God. I wanted to just be like full successories slogans.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But then the episode ends with everybody saying their like little closing thoughts. It does end in like kind of a nice sort of woo-woo way. But one of the things that one of the employees says is like, yeah, we're probably more connected to each other in ways that are invisible to us. And it's nice to be reminded of these ways that we're connected to each other. And it's nice to sort of stop and think about that sometimes. And this is one of the other reasons why it reminded me of religion, where it's like, yeah, it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
To just think about that. Like, we're all people. We're all getting through it. We're all doing our best. It, you know, taking a day and just like being around other people in this way that is like, you know, regarding them as people and hearing these personal stories.
And it prompts moments of vulnerability and intimacy in a space that is like workplaces are not usually terribly intimate. So you get to like take a minute when you're at work to acknowledge that you're like grieving for the loss of your grandfather who clearly meant a lot to you.
Right.
It's like a space where it's okay for you to say, I'm having these big feelings or I really miss this person or, you know, whatever. And I'm like, sure, man. Go forth. God bless.
Exactly. And then use that solidarity to form a union.
Ooh, I like it.
Get as many concessions out of Gwyneth as you can.